It's Where Death Holler Brought Us, Season 3, Slash or Pass. It became the classic horror film podcast of its time. And now Death Holler brings us the most shocking season ever. Season 4, Dead or Dead.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Imagine, if you will, that one of the hosts is absolutely terrified of zombies.
So, what's the plan? Bash him in the head, that seems to work out.
Now, accept the fact there is no escaping this horror. Death Holler brings back the dead. Death Holler, listener discretion is advised. With hospitality like this, you'll never want to leave. We hope you stay alive.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk here.
Everyone, welcome back to Death Holler. I'm your host, Reverend Dr. Death, and joining me as always is my co-host, La Urena, and this episode we are discussing The Beyond from 1981. Tagline, through the gates of hell they came from The Beyond.
I actually like that one. I don't love it. Actually, I like it.
Yeah, it's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
Directed by Lucio Fulci, of course, written by Dardano Sacchetti, who did the story, and then Dardano Sacchetti, Giorgio Mariuzzi, and Lucio Fulci did the screenplay.
I'm going to be real honest. All these names are making me fucking hungry.
Like, you're putting Italian dinner, huh?
I am, yeah. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go cook me some pasta, maybe throw me some, maybe like butter pasta, maybe put some, lemon salmon up in that piece. I don't know, man. I'm hungry.
Mix some starchetti in the middle of that, and and then you'll be see you later.
But yes.
Didn't actually put the person who did the music down on this one, and of course it's Fabio Frizzi again.
Fabrizio. Fabrizio, yep. Makes me think of like Febreze, like I'm thinking like clean linen, you know, smells good.
Made for a budget of $400,000 US. It only made $416,000 US.
Oof.
It has went on to become a cult favorite though amongst horror fans. So it got its money eventually through the home video market. Principal players, we have Catriona McCall playing Liza Merrill, who's trying to renovate an old hotel. She was also in City of the Living Dead and House by the Cemetery, okay. The other two films in this Gates of Hell trilogy.
Okay.
David Warbeck plays Dr. John Maccabee, who is a friend of Liza's and an action hero. I put in quote, or, you know, with a question mark at the end of it, because he shoots a lot of bullets that he shouldn't be shooting out of a 6-round pistol, and gets a lot of headshots. I give him that, but he don't really, I mean, he doesn't save the day by any means. Cinzia Morrell plays Emily, the blind psychic.
I thought it's a blind psycho.
Well, no, she would have been psycho if it hadn't been for a good boy, yeah. You know, later on.
Ooh.
good old boy. Was it Dickie? Was that the?
I think so. Yeah, Dickie.
Yeah.
Get him, Dickie.
She was in Compulsion. We have Al Cliver again playing Dr. Harris. He's not on a boat, motherfucker. He's actually a doctor in this one. And then we have Mario Pia Marsala, who plays Jill, who loses her dad to a zombie. Her mom gets a face full of acid, and she gets her mind blown in the morgue. And if you've seen the movie, the explosion they do for this poor child's head after she gets shot is amazing.
Ugh.
Synopsis. Let's try to figure this one out, shall we? In Louisiana in 1927, a mob rounds up a supposed warlock who's actually a painter and partially crucifies him as well as covering him in boiling wax to stop the evil that has cursed their town. Before the man dies, he warns the mob that the hotel he ran was built on one of the seven gateways to hell and that he was trying to keep it from becoming active. Skip ahead to the good old 1970s, and a woman named Liza is trying to renovate the old hotel to reopen it to the public. Unfortunately, the renovation triggers the dead to rise and brings about hell on earth. Will the main protagonist save the day or end up in purgatory, in a purgatory of endless suffering? Hint, it's the most depressing option of those two. Eyes are popping, Dr. McCabe's pistol ain't stopping, and Dickie was a good boy. Beyond death, beyond evil, beyond the dreaded gates of hell.
Okay, I like that one too.
Other taglines, the living dead have taken possession.
Nope.
The flesh craving undead return to the land of the living and raise a little hell of their own.
Too long didn't read.
From the director of Zombie Flesh Eaters comes H.P. Lovecraft's The Beyond.
It's good. It's not great, and it's not the best. It's okay. Like, it would do if the others were not popping.
Horror maestro Lucio Fulci's masterpiece of fear and the unknown.
No, I hate when they do that. From the great mind of fuck you.
Don't go in unless you're ready to die.
I like that one. It's very broad, though, because it could be a murderer. It could be a portal to hell, which it is. It could be zombies, which it is. It could be, I don't know. It could be a lot of things, but it's that one's good too.
It's not bad. Mm-hmm. This one's very long. Both of these last ones. Behind this doorway lies the terrifying and unspeakable secrets of hell. No one who sees it lives to describe it, and you shall live in darkness for all eternity.
Okay, but you just said that nobody lives to describe it, but it says you shall live in darkness for all eternity. So which is it? I want to know. I need answers.
The seven dreaded gateways to hell are concealed in seven cursed places, and from the day the gates of hell are opened, the dead will walk the earth. Now that is deliberately stealing off Romero, if I've ever heard something.
It is. Ironically, that one is a TLDR, but it also works. So, you know?
Kind of. Yeah. Quotes in this one, and they're all from Emily because she has most of the quotable lines, if there's any in this movie. Woe be unto him who opens one of the seven gateways to hell, because through that gateway, evil will invade the world.
You know, I would have never guessed that a gateway to hell would release evil into the world. That's beyond me. Like, that's kind of a cool concept that they came up with that.
Well, now, if you're talking about stating the obvious or stating ridiculous statements, here's one from you, or for you. Emily, we blind see things more clearly. And finally, from Emily, attack, Dickie.
Get him, Dickie. Get him. Dickie was a certified good boy.
Dickie was.
And you know what? She was technically, like, what was she? She's not a zombie. Is she in, like, a thin veil between death and the living?
Well, she gets her throat ripped out and we don't see her again. So I don't know what she was. But the lady at the end of it, the main character that, go back here, Liza, she was something in between. Okay, yeah.
Because the reason why I bring it up is, like, Dickie killed her for a reason. She was part of the scheme. In a way.
She, She was seeing the zombies when nobody else was, which is funny because she's blind. How was she seeing them? But, I mean, she was experiencing them when nobody else was.
Yeah, so I don't know. There was something going on, and I feel like Dickie was like, you know what? I just don't want to take my chances. And I respect the fuck out of Dickie for that.
It's just funny because he literally tears all the zombies up, runs them away.
Yeah.
And then she's sitting there and she's like, oh, thank you. And then just out of nowhere, he just tears her fucking throat right out. Like, just out of nowhere.
You know, he's tired of her bullshit. He's like, take care of yourself, bitch.
The movie City of the Living Dead, it has a psychic in it as well, which is played by the character who plays Liza in this movie instead of the psychic that's in this one. But it's interesting that there's a lot of psychics in these movies, and they're all associated with the Gates of Hell. It's like, you're right. Like, what is their connection? You could say it's just the psychic thing. They can sense the Gates of Hell, but they somehow all are involved in bringing them about. And most of these movies, too, in this series, involve the main characters ending up in some kind of weird purgatory hell with a bunch of zombies or worse, and yeah, that's how they end. All right, visually, because it's Fulci movie, that's what they're based on. I think some of the visuals in this are, I mean, they're either funny good or they're good. Like, I mean, like I'm caught between the two of them because the tarantula scene
is hilarious.
But at the same time, I got to give him credit because having the tarantula's little, you know, proboscis or whatever you call it, where their little fangs biting into, like, again, eyeballs. There's so many eyeballs that are, like, wiped out in this movie. But, like, biting into his cheeks, ripping out the flesh, thinking of a tarantula having that much power, first of all, it's hilarious how would it rip the flesh out like it did? But then, like, the eyeball scene. And then they're so, like, you could tell the ones that are actually moving in the scene versus the ones that are, like, you know, fakes that are on string, like, that are barely moving, too, if you're watching it, which is hilarious. But what do you think about the tarantula scene?
I liked it. I'm going to be real honest with you. Like, I thought, I mean, yeah.
It's goofy, but I loved it, too. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's bad. It's just, it's one of those things you watch it, and it's just like, I can enjoy this for what they tried to do.
Exactly.
On this budget. The scene, of course, there's another eye gouging scene. That's the scene where the lady is near one of the, she's like the housekeeper. She's near one of the crucifixion nails, and the zombies in this movie don't eat people. They do anything else to you but that. Like in that scene, the zombie pushes her head toward the nail and like through the back of her head out the eye. And it's just kind of like sitting there. That's a pretty good scene.
Wait, now that I'm thinking about it, because they are literally just moving cadavers, like, how did they become zombies? Are they just dead that happen to be associated with the hotel that come back because it's one of the portals to hell? Or can they turn you into a zombie? I'm drawing a blank.
I don't think anybody who's killed in this movie comes back as a zombie that I'm aware of.
I didn't think so either. That's why I'm asking. So I'm like, how are
back.
These?
I take that back. The father does. The father that's doing the renovations when he goes down into the cellar, he comes back later as a zombie.
I wonder how, though. Is it because he... Wait, but everyone else died in... Well, no, because Emily didn't die in the house. She died at her house. Is it people that die in that house that become a zombie?
I think it's people who die near the house or in that hospital for some weird reason, because the hospital's got all that stuff going on.
I think that it's not so much the hospital. I think it's people that are associated with the house in a way.
That would make sense, because the one lady goes to dress the cadaver, which is really weird. It's her husband. I don't know if they said in the movie that she's a mortician or whatever.
Yeah.
But then suddenly the acid, like, you know, comes like pouring out of like over top of her and just like melts her face off. Well, that's a good scene too.
It is.
There's a lot of good
scene,
gore in that scene.
But I didn't understand what happened. She starts screaming at something, and the next we see is she's lying on the floor with her face getting melted off by acid.
I'm probably imagining different parts of this movie, but there is a scene where she I feel like one of the cadavers that's in the frozen part of that morgue, like, you know, kind of moves and she starts screaming from that. And then like the acid falls on her face.
Okay. That would make sense because we know that the little girl goes in, she sees the mom. And then at some point she sees the, oh, she turned into a zombie or she turned into something.
The little girl goes blind, has that weird like eye stuff, like the blind psychic. And then she becomes a zombie later in the movie because like they find her in the hospital and she's crying and stuff and they try to defend her. And then all of a sudden she turns into one of them. And that's whenever that doctor or the one guy who's got the pistol, just, I mean, he turns around with no compunction whatsoever.
Hey. And sorry, then not just you.
Shoots her.
My dog.
Shoots her in the head and her head just explodes. Like, I mean, like TNT has been, you know, inside that bullet or whatever.
That was a good scene. The walls got painted is what happened.
I'm going to be honest. Like, the visuals that I like the best in this movie, I mean, the creepy scene at the end when they go through the portal into hell and there's all those dead bodies and it's just like this wasteland. It's basically a visualization of the painting that you see hanging up in the house. That scene and then all the dead zombies in the hospital, like just creepily, you know, like walking, you know, shambling toward the main characters. Those are pretty effective. I got to give them credit for that. Like, I mean, even outside the gore, I think they sell this weird like hellish feeling or whatever that they're trying to convey in the movie.
I wonder how now I'm noodling right now because you're right. There was a lot more zombies in the hospital. Excuse me. People turned zombies in the hospital that likely were not in that hotel. So I can't blame the hotel for them turning. So I am so confused as to how this all happened.
Wait, you're forgetting something. The hospital has a direct connection to the hotel.
Okay.
Remember, they go underneath, and there's a ladder that goes into the tunnels that connects straight to the...
It's connected to the portal to hell. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, perfect. Now I am clear, and now everything's making a lot more sense. Because I'm like, how the fuck is these zombies? We didn't see one single bite. We didn't see anyone. There was a threat, but these were just moving cadavers.
Moving cadavers that will murder you, basically.
Yeah, no, they'll murder you for sure, but, like, they don't turn you into a zombie, per se. I guess by killing you, you turn into a zombie.
If you're in the hospital, if you're over the gate to hell, you turn into a zombie, yes.
Yeah.
Which is, and they kind of hint at that a little bit, too, because the warlock, the painter, is the first zombie in the movie, and he comes back because they killed him. You know, within the right next to the portal, basically.
Okay. No, and that makes sense. It's right there.
Yeah. And I think the rest of the movies in this trilogy are set up the same way, that all of the places that the zombies rise up are on top of these gateways to hell. And that's why the zombies rise or whatever.
Hmm. Okay.
Now, this is loosely based on a H.P. Lovecraft story, so it does have more of a story than Lucio Fulci normally puts in a movie. I actually kind of dig it. I mean, the whole Louisiana thing from back in the 20s or whatever, the town is cursed, and there's, you know, some kind of weird, and it feels very H.P. Lovecraft that there's a painter who is seeing these visions from this otherworldly place. And, you know, and that's bringing about all these supernatural issues for the people, the local townspeople. Because if you read any kind of H.P. Lovecraft, all of his stuff is about these people who they're creative types who end up tapping into this other, you know, like the Cthulhu elder gods landscape. And then because they tap into it, they tap into that elder consciousness that oozes its way into our world and causes bad stuff to happen. So that's very H.P. Lovecraft of them.
Yeah.
It gets a little murky, like in mid part of the movie, just because I think that's the Fulci effect, where he has a lot of scenes of people. The book is involved, and that's also an H.P. Lovecraft type thing, where they keep seeing that book called Ibon or whatever it is, E-I-B-O-N, and it's like the book that's describing, like, the, you know, the hell escape or whatever.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of scenes in the middle of the movie where there's different people who get killed, and I feel and they get killed in visually remarkable ways, but I feel like that they don't really the story is just kind of loosey-goosey in that part of it, because that's kind of, it feels like something Fulci would do. Like, he's got, like, the one guy who's trying to research the hotel to find, you know, like, the blueprints, the architecture of it, and of course that's when the tarantulas kill him or whatever. He's cursed for trying to you know, to find that. And then, like, the housekeeper gets killed randomly because she's in there cleaning, and she's, you know, one of the zombies appears. The psychic that's doesn't really serve a purpose other than to warn the main protagonist about the gateway. That's all she really does before she dies. Like, there's a lot of, like, that stuff in the middle that's iffy on the story. But then at the end of it, whenever they have all the zombies rise up and then the actual gateway to hell, it kind of ties it back in at the end. So I feel like the story is way better in this than in Zombie, especially. I mean, like, there is a story there. You got to work for it, especially in the middle. But I feel like there's a story here versus where Zombie's just like, yeah, there's a bunch of dead people rising in the Caribbean. Just get over it. You know? What did you feel about the story? I mean, I can see people being on the other side of it and saying, yeah, I get that, but I just felt like it really wasn't connected. I could see some people making that argument.
I think that the story was definitely, there was good intentions behind the story. It was, if you think about it, it's kind of cool. It's a portal to hell. There's dead people around it. We've seen this before with fucking Evil Dead, you know. Not exactly the same, but it's based in a scary-ass hotel. The monsters are pretty scary, in my opinion, or threatening at minimum. But I don't think it was executed to its full potential.
It isn't. And here's the thing. If they took this movie and did a remake of it, a modern remake, and they actually, you know, focused, I mean, they worked good visuals in, but they also, like, tightened the story up, this movie could be amazing.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
Yeah,
because I mean, I'm like you. I see the potential there. It just wasn't like, I don't feel like Fulci, because, you know, I feel like he was focused on other things besides, like, you know, delivering like a very tight, excellent story. You know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to know, since this is the second movie we've seen of his. It's hard to know what his focus is or what his goal is.
I'll give you a comparison. I've seen parts of the House by the Cemetery. I'm not a biggest fan of that one. It's there's like an evil doctor who's a zombie that rises up and attacks the family. But City of the Living Dead is interesting, but it's got this weird vibe to it too, like this one, where it's like, it's almost like a dream more than it is like a, you know, like, yeah, a story. Because the dead are rising, but in that movie, just, well, similar to this one, they appear out of thin air. Like, the zombies could be nowhere around you, and you're in a room by yourself, and then one will appear behind you and kill you. And they usually kill you in that movie with some kind of, like, way over the top gore effect. Like, there's the scene that everybody quotes in City of the Living Dead is there's somebody who gets their face sawed off with, like, a table saw, yeah, by a zombie. But I mean, the zombies don't bite you in that movie. They do they do that kind of thing, and they're always appearing, like, randomly. They're almost like ghosts more than they're like zombies, if you understand what I'm saying.
I understand what you're saying about them appearing out of nowhere, but I swear, like, that's every fucking zombie movie we've ever seen, where it's like all of a sudden there's a zombie behind you.
I feel like, yeah, but I feel like this one is more grounded than that one, yeah, in the sense that in that one they can be literally anywhere in the town and one will appear out of nowhere. Whereas in this one, unless they're at some location that's very close to that house or that hotel, mm-hmm, you usually don't, you don't see them. Like, I mean, they're usually can't
venture too far from the portal. That makes sense.
But the thing is the city was built on the portal in that movie. So that's kind of how they get by with it in City of the Living Dead.
Okay.
Acting. I feel like the acting is definitely better than in Zombie.
Oh, yes. It's better. It's better than Zombie, but it's still not
great. It's not great. The blind psychic takes the cake, though. I mean, for, like, overacting at times.
Oh, God.
I mean, she's really out there.
The best actor in this movie, honestly, was the dog. It was Dickie.
I won't disagree with that. And then the music, I don't know, what are you going to say about the acting otherwise?
Nothing, I was moving on to the music.
The music's actually got that I mean, at times has that, especially at the end of the movie where the portal appears, it's got a very good creep vibe to it. I will give him credit for this movie. This movie is a very good soundtrack.
Yeah, it is. The music definitely made this movie a lot scarier than the previous film, because this movie was a lot more gothy. It was a lot more haunting, if you will. They did way better on the music with this one, for sure.
Yeah, it again, it lends to that we're in a hellscape, a purgatory type feeling.
Yeah, and it really, when the little girl walks in and she sees the mom, you know, with acid on her face, just melting it off, the harpsichord that's playing, that just, you know, that happens, fucking
yes.
Appropriate. That's how it should be, not like, you know?
You could play that music in a clown movie, in a horror movie, and it would probably work, but that's a different scenario.
Killer Clowns from Outer Space. We talked about it.
That music's amazing in that movie, but that's, anyway. Yeah, it's, the music in this is really good. Like, it really sells the atmosphere of the movie. I mean, I don't, like I said, there's the middle of the movie, I don't feel it as much, but definitely in scenes like what you're talking about at the, you know, the morgue where she's, the face is melting, and then especially at the end of the movie, it really picks it back up and carries it.
Well, the movie falls flat because of the acting, the directing of the acting made the storyline fall flat, which sucks. So really in this movie, all we have is 2 out of 4, which is, I said was good. We have music and we have visuals, which in the previous one, we didn't even have music. So
I'll give it a nod to story. I dig what was attempted, even if it wasn't fully achieved. I mean, it's like maybe a half credit on the story, but it's there. So we're a lot closer to a good movie in this one.
Yes.
Trivia for this movie. Bob Murawski of Grindhouse Releasing, who restored the film in 1998, is a film editor and used a shot from this film in the spider bite dream sequence in Spider-Man 2002.
Interesting.
The Book of Ibon, or Ebon, however it's pronounced, featured prominently throughout the film as the creation of American pulp fiction author, poet, and fine artist Clark Ashton Smith, and is a recurring text associated with the Cthulhu mythos, a cycle of literature associated with the works of H.P. Lovecraft. The book, which deals with the various arcane subjects, including the resurrection of the dead, demonic magic, parallel dimensions, and other black magic subjects, is alleged to have been imparted to the infamous necromancer Ibon by the ancient devil god Sathogua in a remote... however you want to say it. In a remote prehistoric epoch, the book was introduced in Smith's 1933 short story, Uba Sathla.
I'm
pretty
so
cool
confused.
That they worked that in.
yeah, definitely. But oh my God, those names.
Well, when you read H.P. Lovecraft, that's the kind of names you get. Swedish rock band Europe based the song Seven Doors Hotel from their first album on this film. The lyrics are a basic retelling of the plot of this movie, and the song became a big hit in Japan and is still a popular track at their live shows.
Interesting.
This film was never seen in America in its uncut form until the Grindhouse releasing in 1998.
Wow.
Tracked down the original master and restored the film, playing it at midnight shows at selected cities. Quentin Tarantino's Rolling Thunder Pictures released the restored DVD as it was his favorite horror film when initially released in 1983.
Well, look at that.
This is the second part of Lucio Fulci's trilogy, also including City of the Living Dead, which came out in 80, and The House by the Cemetery in 81. Even though this came out, the timing on these was weird because they all came out around the same exact time, but they were filmed at, you know, obviously at different times.
Okay.
This uses the same library set that was used in House by the Cemetery from 1981. Director Lucio Fulci had his zombie star Tessa Farrow in mind for the lead in this movie, but by that time she had left the acting profession completely.
Okay, that's weird.
Ratings on this. I'll let you go first because I went first last time.
Okay, so this one did, well, clearly, as we've discussed, had done better. Oh, my dog is stuck on my microphone cord. Okay, here it goes. I'm going to give this one, it's better, but it's not significantly better. Like, I don't think it's made it to the 3.0, me personally. So I'm giving this one a 2.9 because it's definitely better than a 2.5. I think it's just, it just sucks that the acting really kind of takes it down. And that's a mixture of the acting and the directing, because the director thought, this shit's amazing. This is what we're going with.
Yeah, it's, I mean, and you get that a lot of movies too. Like, I mean, I don't like the prequel series for Star Wars because I feel like every actor has done such an amazing job in every other film, but George could not get them to actually act worth a shit in those movies, and they're terrible. Like, Natalie Portman is awful in those movies. Ewan McGregor, who is amazing. I mean, we watched Dr. Sleep. I mean, he is so good in that movie. He sucks in the prequel series as Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Am I blind? I don't agree. I don't think he's amazing, but like, I don't know. I was enthralled in the story.
I appreciate what he was trying to say politically in those movies, but I cannot give him, even like Liam Neeson or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, just Qui-Gon is so bland. His delivery is awful. Like, George is just not a good people director. And so I feel like Fulci's the same way. Like, he's like Dario Argento. He knows what he wants, but Argento can actually direct people and get like good, like, you know, performances out of them. Whereas Fulci's just kind of like, you're kind of doing your thing here. I'm bippity just going to let you go.
Bippity-boppity-boo.
Yeah. Bippity-boppity-boo. I'm going to go higher than you on this. I think my rating on this starts at a 3, and I could get up to 3.5 if I continue rewatching this. I don't think it getting higher than that because I the same problems we discussed earlier, but I love H.P. Lovecraft stuff, and I dig what they tried to do, and I can see it. They were trying and they were like getting there and they tripped and fell on their face, you know?
Yeah. I also would like to clarify that I don't feel like these are zombies. They are exactly what I said they are. They are moving cadavers that will kill you.
Some people's definition of zombies is that.
That's fine. A zombie to me is somebody that bites.
Jason, what do they call undead Jason? They call him zombie Jason.
Yeah.
The movies assert that he's a deadite.
Which I will accept that. But even a deadite can turn you into a deadite by killing you or biting anything. These zombies are not doing the job that I want them to do. I want to see biting. Because that's the fear you get, is that you become one of them when you get bitten. Your life is over once you know you've been bitten by them.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, but at the same time, I can accept if it's a walking corpse, because if you go back to the voodoo tradition, zombies are basically just walking dead.
That is true. That's not what I recognize them as. This is my personal rant and gripe about it. I like bitey zombies. They scare the bejeezies out of me.
I mean, I can't disagree. I mean, the viral zombie that Romero came up with is a lot scarier than they. But at the same time, I will still consider them zombies because they're dead. They're shambling. They are murderous. So, I mean, they're not vampires. They're not sophisticated European, you know, undead. I mean, so they don't fit in that category.
They're not going to ask your permission to come inside.
Phrasing on that statement. I mean, do they get so you're saying that vampires, I'm trying to think of the word. It starts with a C or whatever, but
consent.
Yeah. Vampires get consent before they, do their deed. Is that what you're trying to say?
Absolutely. You need to, it's polite.
Well, it depends on the movie, because I just watched the Fright Night remake for Halloween, and Colin Farrell does a very smart thing. He pulls up the gas line and it sets fire to the house. And he said, I don't have to get consent when there's no house left.
Oh, I remember that. Oh my God. It's been a minute since I've seen that film.
It's smart. It's a good scene in the movie.
Oh, would that be like house grape?
Yeah. Yeah. He molests the house and then he doesn't have to worry about consent anymore.
Oof, tore it down.
But, yeah, I mean, honestly, I do. I actually like this movie. I thought it was, I mean, I liked what they were attempting. The scenes at the end, I get why people always quote the end of this movie as being haunting, because the scenes in the hospital and then that very last scene at the gates of hell, it was very well done. I'll give Fulci that.
Yeah, this movie was a lot more enjoyable. I did not call this movie a snooze fest, and I think that a 2.9 right around the 3
No,
is still
I think
good.
I think that's great. I mean, considering. I mean, I'm not that far off from you. Yeah. I'm right there in that range, too.
Mine doesn't have the ability to go up. I've said this a million times, and I'm going to sound like a broken record. I just don't really enjoy older films. It's very rare that I do. So when I do, it's a fucking, it's a cold day in hell, because that's a hard one to get by with me.
I can't remember. I think you did give a good rating to The Changeling, right? The one with George C. Scott. Remember that? The ghost movie with the bouncing ball and all that?
Yes,
do you
that
remember?
One. And then there was one this season that got a really good score, and I completely forgot because, like I said, I need to start writing down.
Well, we know that you gave Night of the Living Dead a good score. And that's an old movie, but that's a different scenario.
So Zombie, we were both a 2.5.
Yes.
And then this one is, why am I drawing a blank?
You are a 2.9, and I am at 3 to 3.5, depending upon if I could see it going up in a rewatch.
Yeah. Let me see. There it goes. Okay. The Beyond. So yeah, I am writing these down so we can compare, which is nice because we were high on Paranorman. That's funny. Day of the Dead was, I upped my score from a 2.5 to a 2.9. You were at a 5, which is hilarious. And then Wreck, we were right next to each other. I was a 4.7 and you were a 4.6. That's kind of funny to reflect on now that I'm writing them down.
I told you Day's my favorite zombie movie, period.
I know. Which, what did I give? I wish I had written it down. Raccoon City, because that was my ultimate pick, and that movie scared the fuck out of me.
I don't know what you probably gave it a 5, but at the same time, I know I didn't give it that, because I can see the inconsistencies, but I still gave it a 4 something.
Yeah, I think I was in the high movie. 4s for that one. Yeah. But, whoo-wee, that was... Can't believe I picked that as my favorite, only because I couldn't pick Warm Bodies. So
for next time, I think it's Black Friday for sure.
Yes, we'll be releasing Black Friday. I still have 2 films in the can that I need to fucking get out from last week. And I believe those were, did I just spoil? No, because I released Paranorman.
You said get out, and I'm sitting there thinking, I'm like, oh, what season did that shit fall into? Because we're going to catch a lot of flack over Jordan Peele's movies because I don't see it. I don't get why.
I haven't seen any of them. So I
Get Out is technically a human horror movie with supernatural elements. Okay. I mean, it or Which science elements, depending upon how you look at it.
I've definitely heard that, so... I'm aware. I think my husband has seen all his movies. Ironically, usually I know or have a good indication that my husband didn't like it. I can't say he liked it. I can't say he didn't like it. I think he just watched the movies. But if it's bad, he'll be sure to tell me this was fucking shit.
I actually like Us better than Get Out. And I know that's not a popular idea for a lot of people, and that's not saying a whole lot, because I don't think Us is the greatest movie ever, but I think it is a better movie just on what he tried to do than Get Out. The message that he tries to beat into your head and Get Out just gets so, I mean, I get tired of, like, well, you know, white people are terrible, right? I mean, even the ones that are not directly calling us the N-word, They're just using us, you know, for our athletic prowess or our blah blah blah. And it's just like, shut the fuck up. Like, we don't think about you as much as you think that we do, Jordan Peele. Like, we really don't. I mean, I hate to burst your bubble there, buddy. But I mean, I don't sit there all day thinking, how can I ruin a black person's life as a white person?
No.
You know, like, that's not what we think about.
No, I mean, are there people? Yes. I think that's a smaller minority than people who are in the minority crowd, honestly. It's so few and far. I feel like a little bit of racism is definitely embedded in some folks, but I feel like it goes all the way around through the entire color spectrum. I always say all the time, that's white people shit. I say it to you guys all the time. I'm Latina. You know, that's white people shit. That's not appropriate. We're friends. So that shit's funny. You guys make Mexican jokes with me. And that shit is funny when you're lighthearted about it, which majority of people are. It's when you start taking it too serious on both ends, meaning someone's being a little too serious with their that's white people shit or that's, you know, brown people shit, whatever. And when other people start taking it too offensively where it was intended as a joke and you're like, whoa, don't call me brown, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's part of the reason why a lot of people, their comedy has died in America, and that there's no good, like, I mean, feeling there when it comes to like any of the trans stuff or, I mean, you know, or whatever, because that community is not allowing anybody. They want to be accepted, but being part of being accepted is the ability to take jokes, you know. And they're wanting the special treatment of never being the butt of any jokes.
Yes.
But also wanting total acceptance. And you don't get that. Mm-hmm. I mean, nobody gets that.
No. Like, just, you know, have fun with it. And if people are taking it too serious, remove them out of your life, you know. But I can guarantee you, there's not a singular person that's being super serious about it. I feel like that's usually groups. I hate to say that, you know. And you don't want that kind of negativity in your life.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if there is single people that are taking out of context and blowing it up, they have an agenda behind them 9 times out of 10.
Yeah. So, anyways, that took a dark turn. It's okay, everybody. I'm Mexican.
Yeah. Yeah. Whitey's going to come in and take over this whole operation now because you had to bring it down to that level, so...
But it's acceptable because there is a person of color in the studio.
Is that why it's acceptable?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I said so. Duh.
Sorry, anybody out there that, you know, not about this conversation. I can give a shit less what you think about that. Yeah, but the Lucio Fulci stuff, like, oh, yeah. I know he's got his fans. I hear it all the time on the internet, read, different things about why he's one of the best, but I don't feel it, guys. I just don't. I feel like he had a good eye for visuals, and he should have been probably not necessarily director. I think he should have been like maybe director of photography or even like special effects, like, you know, coordinating with them. But I don't feel like as far as this directing ability that he was able to get the whole bag going, in other words. I don't feel like he was a good people director when it came to like all that.
I am surprised though, because I really thought, because you were the one that wanted to watch these, I guess I've recommended films that aren't that great, but I feel like, because this is not my genre of film. Oh, you goddamn dogs.
Dickie's a good boy. Leave Dickie alone.
I feel like movies that you've recommended are not my genre at all, and I'm like, oh well, he's gonna like this a hell of a lot more than I did, and we're right there with each other.
No, I recommended these because you can't not mention them. I mean, if you're going to bring up, you know, these zombie movies, the Italian zombie movies are a staple. It's just that I've never been the biggest fan of them. They're not my thing.
No, definitely.
Anyways, folks, leave us comments. You know, tell us why we were wrong. I'd love to, you know, hear your thoughts, just like on Zombie. And with that, peace be with you.
And with your spirit.